ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
The 2026 home and away season in the AFL is done. Great to have you with us. ABC AFL Daily podcast time. Five drops per week. Be a friend, tell a friend. Ben Cameron and Daniel Harford, the former Hawk and Blue, 2019 AFLW Coach of the Year. Half, great to see you. On to the real stuff now.
I'm a bit tired after 207 home and away games, Benny. Great to see you, even though you've cost us not only a Test Series victory up there in Northern Australia with Darwin and Mackay for the Australian and Bangladesh Series. You've cost us 2 days, or 3 days of cricket we won't have now with the 2-day Test. So I'm a bit livid with you, but I'm pleased that we've finally got to the end of a marathon home and away season after 207 games. We're now our top four, we're now our top six. We know our 7-10 wild cards. We know our wooden spooners, and we might even know who the coach of the Bombers is going to be. We'll see.
We'll get to all of that because it does appear as though McVay is going to be the man presenting to Essendon tomorrow. But just before that half, I've left a nice team dinner, a little bit of Indian to wrap up the series, and I had Jason Gillespie and Glenn McGrath, as well as Stuart Clark, telling Warnie stories about the King. And I had to say, guys, I've got to get up. I've got to go record the ABC AFL Daily podcast.
Well, they love the drop. They love the five different flavours every single week to help be a friend, tell a friend. They are friends and they should tell some friends, just by the way, on that. Oh, I'm a bit jealous of missing that, the Warnie story sessions. That'd be good fun. But in fairness, what time did you finish? You'd finish this afternoon at about 2 o'clock. You've had plenty of time for Warnie stories to now.
Yep. We're on air for an hour and a half afterwards. Then we had to pack
don't
up.
Hear
then,
it, mate.
Then I came back and prepared for the podcast, then went out to dinner, had to wrap up my Warnie
story.
Oh, you
poor fellow, having to go out to dinner. Yeah. don't hear it yourself.
I mean, we're very fortunate to do what we do, and I don't want to sound ungrateful, but I don't often pinch myself, but I did a little bit tonight. It's like, geez, these are the guys I grew up watching, and 2003 Cricket World Cup's the height of my memories, and telling Warnie stories, it's a lot of fun.
I'm a bit jealous.
Just on the Essendon news, so it does seem like McVay is going to be the man. So this was reported by Cal Toomey late this afternoon that he would present to Essendon tomorrow morning, being Monday morning, and that would likely be the final interview before he's awarded the job. I think we've seen this coming for a little while, half. Are you happy with it?
Well, I'm happy enough. I've sort of been in the, if you're going to give James Hurd a go ever, and get the spectre of him away from your footy club, you'd have to give him the job in this situation, but not necessarily was that the right thing for the footy club. And you have to trust the process that's it's been undertaken. And Spike McVay's been a long time assistant, obviously a champion player for the footy club many moons ago, a bit like me when we had hair and abs and life was good. So he's done the yards. He deserves a crack, clearly, if the coaching panel or the appointment panel have decided that's the case. He's got Essendon blood in his bones. I think that will appease the fans. He comes back and tries to right the ship that has been so very, very much off track and off target for the last 20 years. It's a big job, possibly the biggest job in footy.
Getting to the football half, our takeaway, we start with the game between Sydney and North Melbourne this afternoon, a 53-point win in the men's to the Sydney Swans. Following on from what their women had done earlier on in the day with their win that really set the tone for the day. And our takeaway here is that this was an emotional day at the SCG for all and sundry.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Would have been a really challenging week to be an AFLW player in Sydney this week. And they came out really strongly. I thought Lucy McAvoy, the captain, spoke magnificently on Friday when she fronted the media with Colin O'Riordan and the coach. I thought she was just magnificent in how stoic she was and how supportive the people had been to them, but also them to the club in terms of the week that they had to share together in extraordinarily difficult circumstances. And they came out and did what we thought they'd probably do against the Bombers, in fairness, in the W. They're a better team than Essendon at this part of their growth. So that was great. But at 14, 15, I'm not quite sure what the number was in the end. 1,000 people ended up being there watching that game between Sydney and Essendon and the AFLW. So that was great. Some took off after that, but there were 30,000 fans there to see the men play in the game against North Melbourne, a game they should have won, despite the fact there were five changes, obviously, And they did. They had 70 inside 50s. Like, it was an unbelievable performance offensively. They were a bit off target with their boots, but they won the game convincingly, as you said. And really, really interesting to see the emotion pour out after the game and see Errol Goulden in tears and Dane Rampey in tears and Callum Mills in tears, and then the embrace with the coaching staff and the coaching staff with their family in the rooms. And yeah, it was a really emotional scene there at the SCG this afternoon. And I felt not soothed, but I felt that there was some warmth in my heart when it all happened, because they did look like a club that had been obviously through the ringer. And, you know, you can say what you like about those that have been part of the allegations, but the whole club's been tarred with the brush, and they had to try and shake that off and play footy today. And both programs did an amazing job. And I hope they get a chance to enjoy what's tonight after what's been a horrible week.
Yeah, 16,672 were in attendance for the W game earlier. There were a number that departed and didn't stay around for the men's game that followed. This was meant to be a great celebration for the club. Only the second time that the AFLW team had played on the SCG, and linking up with the men's program and the great unity that they had spoken about that those two programs held. It turned out very differently for reasons we well know. I did see one fan had a sign that said, "Cheer, cheer the red and the white, respect all women by day and by night, lift those bloods standards higher." So they were on the TV cameras having left. But there were a lot of fans that left. There were some more that came in to watch the men's game. But it was emotional all round.
And it was historic. I mean, you mentioned the second time the women's team had played on the SCG. It was the first doubleheader in club history too. And of all the weeks for that to be happening, you know, it was a test. It was a real test of their supporters, of their strength as a footy club. And again, to hear Callum Mills and also Lucy McAvoy speak about how united they were despite the challenges they were going through was quite heartwarming, because they are a good footy club. There's been some moments, and clearly the last week has challenged just about everything they've stood for as a footy club, but they have been a fantastic footy club through the journey. And despite the ongoing allegations and investigation, they stood tall today, and I applaud them for that in extremely challenging situation.
I mean, so much has been said about it. There's a lot that can't be said about it. I think we'll leave it at that for what took place earlier on today. Collingwood and the Brisbane Lions way back on Friday night. The Lions won by 63 points half. And our takeaway here is that Chris Fagan had absolutely every right to be blowing up, as was spoken about by Josh Dunkley post-game. Listen to this.
Can you take us just quickly into that last quarter? You get out to 70 points, the lead, and then it very quickly becomes 39 points. And no doubt you're all pretty conscious of percentage being important, given the Hawks taking on the West Coast Eagles. Yep. How and what sort of conversations were happening on the field to say, hey, guys, come on, we got to do something here?
I was actually on the bench in that little patch there, and Fags was blowing up, I tell you. He was...
He might.
Yeah, he was blowing up on the bench. But no, I mean, you just got to sort of take a breath in those moments, as you know, Lee. You know, when the whips are cracking and the heat's on and the opposition's putting on a bit of a score and having momentum, it's hard to stop if you keep stressing out. So to be able to take a breath and, you know, really galvanise our group, I thought we finished the quarter off well. So they did get a couple goals late, but I thought we, you know, really arrested that momentum well, which is going to help us in the finals.
So that was Josh Dunkley, and I'm with Chris Fagan. I would have been blowing up as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You've done such good work to get to a position where a percentage shouldn't have been part of the conversation at all for the rest of the weekend. And then all of a sudden the Pies just pile on unanswered goals. And you think, oh, you know, just of all the times to cough up a patch of play that allowed the opposition to just nail the scoreboard, it was unfortunate. So, yeah, you're entitled to. You've worked too hard to get to a position where you give yourself the best chance to win a premiership. And the Brisbane Lions recently know how to do that better than anyone. So Chris has been at the top of the mountain. I think he's entitled to throw a few grenades when he needs to, and the boys are just starting to slacken off at the work site.
Half, you know what I was looking at on Friday night, don't you? Nick Dacos, counting his disposals. 26 he finished up with. He fell short of averaging 35-1. And becoming the first player in the history of VFL AFL football to average 35 disposals or more, a goal more game across an entire season. Couldn't believe it.
While you were thinking about Nick Daicos, I was thinking about you. I was worried for you because I knew this would be a top of your mind and this was going to weigh heavily on you if it didn't go to plan. And then he's sitting on the bench for long minutes and I'm thinking, oh, my man Benny's going to be losing his mind. That 35-1 is not going to happen for poor old Nicky D. What did he miss by? What, and the 27, would that have gotten him over the line or did he need 28 or 9?
I think he needed 29. Right. So I think he sort of was three short in the end.
He's been a disappointing player. Let's be honest. He's been a disappointing player all year.
Yeah. It's bordering on algebra when you've got to work out sort of what you need to get to an average. And I'm not that great at that, but I knew that he needed a few more and they took him to the bench and I thought, no, don't do that. Put him back out there. We need the record, but it wasn't to be.
Well, he's being saved for another day and that was the right thing to do from Craig McRae.
Yeah. Can I pose this one to you as a link between Collingwood and Brisbane, the game on Friday night, and the game that has just finished before we record this, Hawthorn and the West Coast Eagles? Oh, I have a takeaway that games of consequence in the final round should be a shotgun start. Oh, I don't think Hawthorn should have had the advantage of knowing the equation, of having the Duckworth-Lewis sheet, for lack of a better term, as to what the equation is and what they need to potentially make up that spot. The reason Fagan was blowing up is because he didn't know the equation, so he wanted as much as he could have.
Yeah, I understand the sentiment of that, but in the current commercial and economic climate of elite sport, there's not a chance in hell that you're going to have 9 games start, or even 2 or 3 games start at the same time in the final round, because the broadcasters, and we're involved in this as radio broadcasters, we want as many eyes and ears as humanly possible to justify ourselves and your exorbitant wage, Benny. And that's why that they'll never have the shotgun start, EPL style, which is unbelievable drama. We've seen what that's done over the years when it's mattered with games of consequences you talk about. Sadly, there weren't too many of those this weekend. So it was a little bit of a fizz of the whole thing. And watching a few games live, there was an element of pre-season training about a lot of it. A lot of high scoring, a lot of offense, not a lot of defense, as they say in the classics.
Our defense is just to keep the cows and the sheep in the paddock, as Jason Gillespie always tells me when he's getting upset with the lack of it from our Australian batsmen. But why not half? I mean, the NFL is the biggest entertainment product, not just in the US, probably in the world.
Yep.
And most weekends they have a Thursday night game. They have nothing Friday. They have nothing Saturday. Then they have a whole slate of games that start at 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock, and then they might have a Sunday night game. And then they have a Monday night game. Like surely, even if you go into the final round and Josh Bowler, who's the head of fixtures, says, look, we've got 4 games of real consequence. And on Saturday afternoon or on Sunday afternoon, we're going to run a shotgun start. We're going to have a red zone style product. And you can watch them all running concurrently. How entertaining would that be?
Be entertaining if you're a neutral. But it'd be a pain in the backside if you're a team that's trying to get into the spot and fighting with somebody else and you want to keep an eye on that game and watch your game as well. And the other thing is the States have got 350 million people living around. Yeah. We've got 26. So it's a slight different in demographic and the eyeball opportunities for your marketers, your advertisers and your revenue for your players in the end and your clubs in their annual distribution. So I think a lot of people would be affected by that, despite the fact it's only one weekend. And let's be honest, if we think about what's going to be happening next weekend in Wildcard Weekend, we're doing that for commercial benefit.
Yeah, that is true. And we are a regional sport in a small country. Like half the country is interested in the AFL and Aussie rules, and we're a small country already. Just a couple of quick ones out of that Hawthorn win over the West Coast Eagles, the final game of the home and away season, which they won by 62 points. Was that mark of the year by the Wizard Watson?
I was thinking about it at the time. I was watching it, so the Wiz get up in the wet over Liam Baker. So it's not exactly, it's 10 stories in a single bound type stuff. But I can't think of any that are in front of it. I couldn't scratch my head to remember any great marks for the season. In fairness, I did rack my brain, but I couldn't think of any up front. Have you got a couple that you can remember?
No, I think that might be it, but maybe I'm a prisoner of the moment. I'd have to go back and see a few. I haven't gone deep enough into the archive of the year to remember too many.
There's no major Jeremy Howe standouts or Russell Robinson back in the old day. There's no Ashley Sampi sitting on heads at the MCG from this year that I can remember, or Sean Smith.
Yeah, Do you know I got Sean Smith to reenact that, Mark, one day at a pub in Melbourne? We saw him at the pub. I was with Ken Judge, your former coach,
yes.
And we saw Sean Smith at the pub, and we stacked up a chair and got him jumping over the top of us, taking a hanger. The photo's on my Instagram half. That's Sean Smith over the top of the pack taking the mark. It was a great mark. Was that at the Wacker back in the day when he took that?
It was the Gabba.
It was the Gabba.
Was it the Gabba or?
I think it was the Wacker.
No, it was in Queensland. Was it Carrara or was it the Gabba? It was one of those grounds.
Yeah.
Definitely in Queensland.
I'll flick you the photo after. And then Harley Reid's tackle on Jai Newcombe might be a bit of a problem for him at the start of 2027.
Yeah, although Newcombe did continue to play on, so that's a good result if it's going to be something for him, yeah.
Our boys, Melbourne, who have been the kings of the MCG, were defeated by the Western Bulldogs, who are a box of chocolates, a 21-point win. And this game just ruined our dream of a Collingwood-Carlton wildcard game and was even more costly for the Demons.
Well, I was at Casey Fields this afternoon watching Melbourne W play their opponents, which escapes me at the moment. Who'd they play? They played somebody. They played the Giants. That's who they played. And I saw Big Maxie gone from afar, and I was going to go and give him a piece of my mind because they, as you rightly said, they robbed us of a Collingwood-Carlton wildcard, the first ever wildcard round. Collingwood-Carlton would have been an unbelievable way to kick that off next Friday night. And Maxie and his mates decided that they were going to ruin it for everyone. So I nearly gave him a piece of my mind today. But it was a strong performance from the Bulldogs. It was a lackluster one from the Demons. Not sure why and how that happened, but it was a strong performance from the Bulldogs. They seemed up for it. They didn't want to travel interstate in that first week of the wildcard and have to end up in Adelaide, which is what would have happened had they lost that game. So they had something to fight for. There was a game of consequence for them. And they came out and played accordingly. And they were very, very good. And as you say, for the Ds, they had a few injury issues. Disco Turner went off, came back on. He was okay. Jefferson, ankle injury. And now Jack Lever is going to miss the wildcard game as well with injury on the back of that that performance on Saturday night. So, yeah, a really interesting outcome for the Ds. We'll see what happens.
It's the difference between a week off and now a cutthroat wildcard game against...
Yep.
A resurgent Carlton team that have just beaten Fremantle, who might be the best team in it. So it's a big difference for Melbourne.
It's probably the last team you want to play at the moment, isn't it? You wouldn't want to be playing Carlton at the moment.
No, I don't think so. They beat Fremantle by 37 points half. And just Daniel Hoyan, friend of ABC AFL Daily, particularly on the Sunday night.
I played cricket with Daniel Hoyan, did you know? Local cricket, the Riverside Cricket
Club. I didn't know that.
Hoyney and I were cricket mates. He was an opening batsman. Very, like, Dizzy would have loved him because he defended, you know. He knew what the fence was for. It wasn't just for the
Doesn't
cow
surprise
and the,
me.
The sheep. Very boring batsman, but a fine cricket man, Daniel Hoyne.
You made him, really, too.
I didn't want to say that, but.
Yeah. I knew the script.
You did.
But he's telling us that Fremantle have the best profile in years. They can't lose it. But my concern around Fremantle is their midfield trio, Brayshaw, Sarong, and Young. So this is something Corbin Middlemouse was big on for a long time, that we all loved Fremantle's midfield, but they got beaten a lot. And I just went back and I thought, when they played Melbourne, they got beaten in the midfield. I looked at the game against Carlton. They were minus 22 contested possessions, minus 13 for clearances, minus 5 for centre clearances. Maybe this is a case that they'd taken the foot off the accelerator, but the top five ball winners were all the Blues midfielders. So Walsh, Smith, Florent, Hewitt, Cripps, before you get to a Docker. Against Melbourne, they got smacked in contested possessions again. They did win clearances, but centre clearances were even. But all the primary ball winners were, again, Melbourne's midfielders before you even got to Sarong, Brayshaw and Young, who went 21, 20 and 19. And then against the Dogs, where they didn't play their best, but were able to win, they were hammered in the midfield again. Liberatore, Richards and Sanders had more disposals than Brayshaw, Young and Sarong. And the three leading contested possession winners on the ground were those three Dogs that I mentioned, not the Dockers. So do you share my concern or am I overselling it?
I think you have to have a little question mark over Fremantle because they haven't been able to do it yet. And they've been the dominant team, which we've touched on a lot through the home and away season here on the pod. But they haven't done it yet. They haven't got to September and done it yet and shown us that they are. It's not just a home and away performance, that it is translatable to a finals performance. So there has to be that little asterisk leading into September for Fremantle. But on the back of the last couple of weeks, because they've been so far out in front, and I know this in the rational mind of a footy of a fan, a sports fan, this shouldn't make any sense at all. But what's to play for when there's nothing to play for, so to speak? They're always locking up top spot. And even just subconsciously, that fact that you're going to finish on top, you're going to have two home finals, which will be a significant advantage. Let's be honest about that. It's going to be a significant advantage for Fremantle. What do you play for when there's nothing to play for? And how hungry are you to deliver in the last couple of weeks when you know that there's a bigger, shinier prize in the offing down the road a bit? So I'm a little bit hesitant to buy too deep into conspiracies and to too many theories about Fremantle. But having said that, we still need to see it happen in September, which is what they're going to get a chance to do now a couple of times at home.
Adelaide were far too good for GWS, half a 56-point win. Our takeaway here, this was definitely goodbye Tex and maybe goodbye Toby, probably goodbye Toby.
So why is it goodbye Tex? So Adelaide, retired from Adelaide, finished from Adelaide. This could have a bit of Dion Prestia about this for me, that Richmond tried to retire him. He just said, no, I'm not quite retired yet. I'm just having a spell at the Tigers.
And you think like he could go on?
Well, why wouldn't you? Like, what did he kick for the year, Tex? 40-odd?
Yeah, 40-odd. And he's been rested a fair bit.
He's been rested a heap. And he's still moving really well. Why wouldn't Essendon, St Kilda, Collingwood, why wouldn't one of those clubs that are looking for a potent forward target, who's clearly got, he could go around again at Adelaide next year if he wanted to, from a form and fitness-wise. But I have no doubt in my mind about that. So why wouldn't you? And there's been a bit of talk today about Scott Pendlebury and the Gold Coast should be chasing him and whatever in the Luke Hodge sort of Grant Birchall, Sam Mitchell roles, and Jordan Lewis of recent years as well. Why wouldn't somebody go to Tex and say, we just need a little bit of help in the forward half of the ground. You're pretty good at this. And yeah, we can play you 2 out of 3. Why can't Tex go again?
I'll let that stand as comment. It was an emotional night. He kicked 3 goals inside 10 minutes after a big pre-game tribute. Ended up with 6 for the game. And it does mean that win that Adelaide do avoid the wildcard games. It feels like Toby Green's departure is a fait accompli. And this was quite funny in the lead up to the game half. Did you see that he put out on Instagram, if anyone's got some size 10 Pumas, can you bring them to the Adelaide Oval? I've forgotten my boots. Left them in Sydney. Do you ever forget your boots?
Well, no, I was talking about this with the great Nathan Burke at Cadinia Park last night when we were doing the game. We had boot studders who would take our boots. So we didn't actually even have to bother carrying our own boots. They're on the plane or on the truck or however we got to where we were going. They were there when we arrived.
They were just there. Yeah, right.
So we didn't have to do that sort of stuff.
Well, this is a bit of a cricket crossover ABC AFL Daily, isn't it? Half.
It is.
I once captained, it reminded me, I was trying to think, did I ever forget any gear? And it reminded me I was captaining seconds back in the day when I was sort of young.
Just to show leadership, not because you're not good enough to play in the ones, just to show leadership.
I think it's never a good sign when you're captaining the twos. It means you're not getting promoted to the ones. But I've declared on the second day. So we must have rolled them for about 90-odd. And we've made 180 or 200 or whatever. I said, that's enough, boys, bring it in. So we brought it in, started the warm-up, and someone said, where's the new ball? And I went, oh, no. Where is the new ball? I don't have a new ball. Does anyone have a new ball? And we didn't have one. So the opposition captain had to drive around the corner because it was an away game for us, drive around the corner to his house, get us a new ball, bring it back so we could use that to bowl against them in the second innings. And he said, it's probably 3:30 by this stage. We'll call it off a bit early at 5:30. And then we had him about 6 down. And I was getting pressure from the older bloke saying, we should go for the outright. And I said, look, I've agreed with the other captain that we call it off a bit early. We're using their ball up. I think we've got to go off. So that was that. Half it. It wasn't my finest moment in captaincy.
Mate. 32 goals, by the way, for Tex. 32. I've done a bit 32. Of homework.
How many games?
16.
Yeah. So two a game.
So if you play 20, you get 40 goals. That's a good return.
Yeah. We're good.
32 from 16 is a pretty good return, too. But Toby Green, Adam Kingsley's presser was hilarious because he was talking about Toby Green. He was talking about Jake Stringer. He was talking about Jesse Hogan. He was basically just saying goodbye to everyone. and the post-match press conference, which was all sounded a bit bizarre, in fairness, having listened to that after what's been a pretty challenging season for him and the Giants, what they expected. So, yeah, we'll see. I think Toby goes. I think Jake goes. And from what Adam Kingsley was saying last night, Jesse's going as well.
Mm. We're a pretty self-reflective sort of group here at ABC AFL Daily.
I get
plenty of robust feedback from Corbin Middlemass regularly. But probably could have done this off the top, but I was told that it would come out tonight. So I was waiting for this. But confirmation of the games for the wildcard round next weekend. So Friday night at the MCG, 7:40 p.m., the Bulldogs and the Pies. So that will be the second wildcard final, as it's known, wildcard final two, even though it's played first.
Right.
And then on Saturday at 7:35 p.m., so not a twilight game, a full night game, okay. Melbourne and Carlton at the MCG.
Well, two Melbourne teams, so you don't need to worry about travel and that sort of thing. So that makes a bit of sense. Mm. And a big crowd at the G Saturday night is good business. That makes sense.
Yep. So just to recap it all, so Melbourne and let's start on Friday. Bulldogs and Collingwood on Friday. Then on Saturday night, Melbourne and Carlton. Those are the wildcard games. The top six, Fremantle, Sydney, Brisbane, Hawthorn, Geelong and Adelaide. So that means Geelong finish outside the top four. They will play the winner of the match between the Western Bulldogs and Collingwood. And then Adelaide will play the winner of the match between Melbourne and Carlton. So the top four will be Fremantle and Hawthorn, and then Sydney and Brisbane will meet in the other qualifying finals. The other games, half, and we can rattle through these. These were less consequential, although Geelong's win did mean momentarily they could have finished in the four had Hawthorn lost. A takeaway, Chris Scott flicks the magnets around more than anyone, Luke Beveridge included. What was going on here?
Well, as soon as I saw Jeremy Cameron lining up at halfback, I thought, hang on a second. What is happening here? What is he doing? It's Jeremy Cameron's first game back after the collarbone incident, of course, against the Giants in round 17. Well, I'm thinking, why did he play halfback? And that's where he was for the majority of the night. Went forward for a couple of minutes here and there and had some patches. But, yeah, I was a bit surprised by that. I mean, because that's where he played when he got injured.
Yeah,
that's where
it was.
He was playing down back. And he started on Toby Green, I think, that game against the Giants. But I just thought when he comes back, get him back into a groove and get him working with Shannon Neal
Jay Polkinghorne.
And Jay Polkinghorne.
I've got a theory as to that's why he did it. So I think he's still trying to work out what that best forward line mix looks like. He probably knows what it looks like when Jez is in there. So maybe he was trying to work out whether or how Polkinghorne, Shannon Neal, Ollie Dempsey, and if Danger's to be down there two at different points, how that will all function and what it looks like.
But Jez is not going to play halfback in the finals, is he?
No, that's what I'm saying.
So why wouldn't you have that? Because he hadn't been there for the last six weeks. So why wouldn't you play him with those guys and see how it functioned, being able to manipulate the positioning as you needed to through the course of the game? They're always going to win the game of footy, and they did that handsomely last night. So my personal view, and Chris Scott's won more premierships than I have at AFL level, so I'll bow to his excellence, was that you would want to give that a go and see how it looked. But when he started at halfback, I'm thinking, what's going on here? Yeah. Ollie Henry was good, forward of the ball as well. Coming into September, that's a good sign. You mentioned Ollie Dempsey, but they got beat in the middle a fair bit. Tip Taranto had a fantastic game for the Tigers, and he's had a pretty good year too. It's a shame he plays for a team in the 17th, because I think people would respect him more and acknowledge him more if he played for a team that's more mid-table. But he was brilliant again last night in very, very challenging circumstances for the Tigers.
He certainly was. Port Adelaide just got over the top of Essendon, a 10-point win. It does mean that Essendon will win their third wooden spoon. Previously, 1933 was their first. Two wins, a percentage of 77. Then it was 2016, which was the asterisk year. And then now 2026. So two in 11-year period, if you're being fussy, but basically, two in a decade.
Why would you bring that up? All our Essendon supporters who love the pod, we'll just be just turning it off right now. Why would you bring that up?
Because I know Corbin listens to it, and I just wanted to twist the knife in a little bit further. Our takeaway here is from Josh Carr, and he basically said that history suggests if you get to this point, you're up against it in terms of keeping Zach Butters. So I think we'll let that stand and move on to the most wasteful game of the final round, Gold Coast and St Kilda, which the Suns won by 23 points. I've got a question to you, Half. Where did Bradley Hill play his best football? Hawthorn, Fremantle, or St Kilda?
He's playing some excellent footy at St Kilda, there's no doubt. But he was a game-breaking wingman for Hawthorn throughout the three-peat era in 13, 14, 15. He was amazing what he was able to do. He's excellent as a loose sort of halfback runner at the Saints, don't get me wrong. But in terms of impact on games and winning games off his own boots sometimes, he did that. I think, and I might be biased because I watched it a bit more closely perhaps than his time at St Kilda, but I think as his role in that three-peat team was significant. So I would say, I would lean to that, ask that question.
The AFLW over the course of the weekend, I know you've been broadcasting a lot of it, so I'll give this takeaway to the 2019 AFLW Coach of the Year, Daniel Harford.
And 2020 runner-up, probably would have won it if it was a full season, but I don't want to talk about it.
Double headers work?
Double headers are great. Now, there are people out there who will say that, and you mentioned this before, 16,666 or whatever it was today at the SCG for the Swans and Essendon game. Well, people will say, well, oh, yeah, but 13,000 of them are there to see the get ready for the boys and watch them play the Kangas. It actually doesn't matter. What the AFLW needs, in my view, is more eyeballs. And the way you can do that really easily at this time of year in the crossover period is play the matches as double headers, get the footy fan who and the old school footy fan, crusty old men like me, who would go and watch the reserves, perhaps the 19s even back in the old days, at the same venue, watch the 19s, watch the reserves, and then watch the seniors. And you've got an afternoon, a full day of footy, which people love. And this time of year, when there's finals around the corner, everyone loves footy, even the teams that are battling. So double headers absolutely work. I would encourage headquarters to plan as many of those as humanly possible. Now, I know it's a bit logistically challenging for broadcasts and all that, but work around it and find a way to make it happen because double headers work. What we learned on the weekend, on top of that, Benny, is that North Melbourne are very, very good. Again, won their 29th game in a row in the grand final rematch against the Brisbane Lions. We saw Hawthorn have a good win over Port Adelaide. Melbourne are going to be a force again, as many thought they would. The Giants had a bit of a hiccup after a great win last week. Tigers got rolled by the Dogs, who are now 2-0 at the Western Oval. And the Pies and Saints are really battling, and the Bombers to a degree as well. So that's sort of the summary quickly of round two of the AFLW. But double headers, just throw them at me. Throw as many as you need to at me because it works.
Oh, I'm with you. Just very quickly as we wrap this up, because I posed this question to Corbin on Thursday, because this is a cricket AFL Daily, ABC AFL Daily podcast crossover. What ends first, North Melbourne's winning streak or Marnus Labuschagne's century drought? Oh, I think it'll be North's winning streak will end first because Marnus was forlorn post-player. I think he knew he needed runs in this test and he might not be on the plane to South Africa.
Well, Marnus should not be on the plane to South Africa. In a crossover pod of AFL Daily and International Cricket Summer, Marnus should absolutely not be on the plane. Marnus, sadly, and I've been a big fan of Marnus. I quite like Marnus, but he's getting hard to love and support when his performances have been lackluster and subpar for so long. So he shouldn't be on the plane to South Africa. So I think that's probably the end of his test career, which means North Melbourne's run will end before Marnus's dearth of runs.
Half, you're the best in the biz. Love your work. Great job as always.
When are you back home?
I come back tomorrow, Half. I've got wildcard finals to get ready for. I know I'm not a believer in it, but I'm coming back and I'm ready to go.
Well, I want to see you. I want to give you a big hug. So let's do that soon. One more glass of red for you and Jim, and look forward to catching you back in town, mate. Thank you very much. Here come the finals.
I look forward to it, Half. You're a great giver of hugs. This has been ABC AFL Daily Podcast. Of course, tomorrow night, AFL Monday. You can find that right here in this channel shortly after 8 p.m.